Mini-episode 1773 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at Sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late-night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge Mini Episode 1773. This is FDH Managing Partner Rick Morris coming at you. And today we've got our 2024 World Series preview, and for that we have one of our favorite FDH Lounge dignitaries, one of the original ones after the originals, if you go back to the late 2000s here, one of the next group in after the originals, one of the very first ones in there. Russ Cohen was the first one in after the originals, but this gentleman not too far behind, our great friend Steve Callis, a co-host of the Callis Remarks podcast with another great friend and FDH Lounge dignitary, Joe Stazak, and of course, sports editor at the Westchester County Post, westchestercountypost.com. And again, Steve, a veteran of New York media, whether it be WFAN back in the day, SNY, etc. He has been quoted far and wide and hosted far and wide as far as New York media goes, and so... Again, he knows a thing or two about a thing or two when it comes to the New York teams, certainly the sport of baseball. He's one of our regulars on here that we talk baseball with, as well as let me give a shout out here to another great friend and FDH Lounge dignitary, Ken Detweiler, who I hope to have back on with us sometime soon in the near future talking baseball. Ken is dealing with an awful lot of things here at the moment, some heavy things that he is dealing with, but we love you, Kenny, and can't wait to have you back on to talk baseball. In the interim, it's me and Steve breaking down the 2024 World Series. So, Steve, all pleasure as always to have you on, my man. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Great to be with you. Great to do the show. Wish Ken could be a part of it, but I know maybe we'll get him for a recap after the World Series is over.
If it works for him, that would be awesome. I can't wait till the next time it's the three of us breaking it down. I always have fun breaking it down with you. We did the playoff preview, of course, a couple of weeks back, and my picks all went down in flames here. I had it being the Padres over the Astros in the World Series. I was out there with, it turns out, with a lot of the hipsters. The Padres were really the hipster pick kind of coming into the playoffs this year. I bid on it. They gave the Dodgers a really good series, but couldn't follow through in the end. You said Dodgers over Guardians. You came very close on this. We were laughing about how that would have been a rematch of the 2020, or I'm sorry, the not 2020, the Dodgers won it in 2020, the 1920 World Series when it was the Cleveland Indians against the Brooklyn Robins, and we were laughing about that, and I'm going to have more on that in a second here when we get into the history of the Dodgers and the World Series, but you picked one of these teams to make it here, and you came, I'll say, relatively close on another one. The ALCS was not necessarily that close. Not to say that there weren't some key things that could have swung it in the right direction if they'd all gone Cleveland's way, and I mean each and every one of them, because that's a team that always has no margin of error when they play the Yankees because of the cheapness of the ownership. But again, you came within a few things in Game 3, and Game 3 is the one they won, but Game 4, Game 5, maybe Game 2, a few things here and there, and you might have been right.
Well, I think that's true, but I have to say, looking at it when we did this, whatever it was now, 2.5 weeks ago, I don't remember the exact date, but at that point in time, the Yankees did not have a closer. They had Clay Holmes, who had blown 11 saves, and Aaron Boone stuck with him, and then it became obvious he was not the answer. But Luke Weaver, frankly, came out of nowhere and became a big-time closer, and he had a really, really good series, except I think for one game. He had a really, really, he's had a really, really good playoffs as the closer. But what the Guardians did in Game 3 with that incredible comeback, and then it looked to me like they were doing it again, because I thought it was going to be 3-0, the series is over. But what they did in Game 3 was incredible, the Guardians. What they did in Game 4, it looked like it might be incredible, that back-and-forth game. But at the end of the day, they found their closer, and they also came up with Mark Leiter, who is Al Leiter's nephew. I know that.
Mm-hmm.
Don't know if Mark Leiter's father pitched in the majors, but obviously Al Leiter did. But in any event, they wound up having Luke Weaver be the closer. Clay Holmes, although he had one bad game as well, he came out and was pitching better as a seventh or eighth guy. I mean, they have a real good bullpen. Not sure if it's better than the Dodgers, but the Yankees starting pitcher is better than the Dodgers. But I really thought the Guardians, after Game 3, during Game 3, 7th, 8th, even 9th, the Yankees up 3-0, this is over. But Guardians came back, they fought back, in the next game, and then that was kind of it after they lost Game 4. But to their credit, you know, they had a really good year, rookie manager, you know them better than I. But when I picked them, the Yankees did not have a closer, which I thought was huge in the playoffs, and you know better than I how good the Cleveland bullpen was. But I also think what happened to them is they got run ragged. And maybe it was including the earlier series that kind of wore them down, but Class A, come on, he was awful.
Yeah.
And these guys, when you go to the well now on these relievers, and please, I don't want to hear people compare any of these guys, including him, to Mariano Rivera. You understand Mariano Rivera's greatness more now that he's gone, and nobody can come close to doing what he did. And I don't think anybody will, to tell you the truth. But in any event, to me, the Yankees had no closer. You knew, although he got a little hot at the end, you knew Judge was not good in the playoffs. You knew Stanton was Babe Ruth-like. Maybe I'll get into that a little later because I have my own theories about Ruth and everybody else in the history of the world. And, of course, Soto, who is probably looking at a $500 million contract, maybe looking at a $600 million contract now because he's not Ohtani. He's not $700 million. That's Ohtani. He didn't pitch this year, obviously. But, you know, the Soto, Judge, Stanton, you know, it's going to be against the Ohtani, Betts, Freeman group. But I think the Guardians had an excellent season. I think they could have won that series, but the bullpen specifically, you know, when Mark Leiter's pitching in big spots, you're like, really? And then he did well, and then Boone brought him back the next day, and he did well, and Luke Weaver came out of nowhere to be the closer, and when you took the pressure off Clay Holmes, he was really good. So that's not something I was expecting, and I don't think many other people were. And in terms of the Yankee lineup, you know, they got the big three, but Stanton in the playoffs, no matter how bad he looks in the regular season, Joe, the guy hits home runs, and that big three, if Judge gets hot, because Judge was like in the 150s for his playoff career, but, you know, he hit a couple of home runs in the piss against the Guardians, and I think this has a chance, in my view, to be a slugfest, Yankees-Dodgers.
I think so. A couple notes on what you said there with the bullpens. First of all, with Mark Leiter, as you pointed out, him and Al Leiter there. Al Leiter, of course, as anybody in this town could tell you, on the 97 Marlins. So I'd say those two right about now are ranking in public esteem in this town with Art and David Modell right about now, I think I would say. I would also say, speaking of 1997, I was at my favorite Mariano Rivera performance of all time, and that would, of course, be game four in the bleachers of the 1997 ALCS. That
was Andy Alomar Jr.?
Yes. That was amazing. That was amazing.
I can barely remember, Joe.
That's my all-time fave. You know, but in terms of looking at this, there was an ESPN article earlier in the week, and it was like, how the Yankees broke through and ended the 15-year drought. And it's one of those things where I'm a little bit cynical when I go to read something like that, because it's not that I'm not one of these whiners that's like, oh, it's going to have a pro-Yankee slant. But it's just like, writers a lot of times won't put something in a story because they're afraid of looking biased or something like that. I don't remember the name of this gentleman, but hats off to him for not being afraid of saying what he needed to say in the article, among other things. Among other reasons that they broke through after a 15-year drought, they didn't have to play the Astros. And this is reminiscent of, I used to talk about this back in the day with the Steelers. I used to make the old pro wrestling analogy that the Steelers paid off the Jets to take out the Patriots so they wouldn't have to play them. It was always somebody else. It would be the Jets, or it would be the Broncos with Jake Plummer. It would be somebody like that. Because the Steelers could never beat the Patriots. And as much as I loathe Belichick and the Patriots, I'll put them over any time at the expense of the Steelers, me being a lifelong North Coaster. So I'm going to say the same thing here. There's a big old asterisk on that, but you know what? Hey, the Steelers had a lot of stolen glory in those years. They won 2 Super Bowls. So I don't rule out that the Yankees, with their stolen glory of winning the American League without having to go through the Astros, going through the Tigers and the Tribe, I will tell you this. One of my very, very good friends got very riled up about it on Facebook, the comments from, and it was obnoxious from, I think it was A-Rod and Jeter, but they got the easy path playing Cleveland. Well, okay, stop me when I'm telling lies is what they should have said, because you look at it here, and again, Cleveland basically played down to what these guys expected. I mean, they just, if you're going through a path that includes Kansas City and Cleveland versus, we talked about this in the playoffs coming in, the National League, and just what a meat grinder it was going to be. And I thought the Mets were going to come out of the National League Championship Series. I got to take my hat off to the Dodgers. I mean, I underestimated them at every step along the way here, but they came through a meat grinder. The Yankees, not so much. And that is one of the things, as I kind of tip my hand a little bit about where I'm going with this thing, is that the Yankees did not have to go through a bunch of killers the way that the Dodgers did.
That's 100% correct, and I will say, I just saw some numbers. No Freddie Freeman, they averaged 9 runs a game. Again, I think this is going to be a slugfest. I have a friend who wanted to play the over in virtually every game of the, certainly of the Mets-Dodgers. I hope he did, and I hope he parlayed it, because I think every game was over, whatever. You know, I don't really follow over-unders, frankly, in baseball, but no Freddie Freeman, they averaged 9 runs a game. You got Tommy Edman, who was picked up, I think, from the Cardinals, right?
Yep.
And he is... not only in the last game when he hit, you know, he drove in, doubled in the first or second. He was batting cleanup, Tommy Edman, and he had a 2-run homer and a 2-run double in the first few innings, 4 RBIs. That led to kind of opening it up. He's the NLCS MVP. So I haven't even talked much about Ohtani, who, you know, he had some incredible numbers. Did you see? He was hitting like 800 or something.
Yep.
I mean, it's just incredible what he's done. Although, again, for me and the Babe Ruths, you know, just remember, Ohtani didn't have to set foot on the field this year.
Right.
I think it's a big difference if you can be a good DH hitter, and obviously he's a great hitter, but he's a great DH as well, and that's no easy task. But, you know, their lineup, Ohtani, Betts, Freeman, I mean, that's as good as you get at the top of a lineup. And, you know, maybe you tell me Soto, Judge, and Stanton in the playoffs. You always have to add, you know, usually we say so-and-so if healthy. Well, with Stanton, it's Stanton, in the playoffs. He does have a better home run per at-bat percentage than Babe Ruth. And I would ask people to go to Speaking of Sports and look at, I think, not the one that's up now, but maybe the prior one. I wrote a long thing on Babe Ruth versus everybody because, as you know, all of Babe Ruth's home runs are in the World Series, like Mickey Mantle. They've been passed by a dozen guys now for, quote, postseason home runs.
Yep.
But when Stanton gets under at-bats, I think he's like home run 8.2, and now Ruth is home run 8.4. I felt obligated, Rick, to point out that in 1915, 16, and 18, Babe Ruth, as you know, with the Red Sox, was a Hall of Fame pitcher.
Yes.
And would have been a Hall of Fame pitcher as he kept pitching.
Yep.
He was 3-0 in the World Series, not the playoffs, not the postseason, just the World Series. And I looked him up, and he was like 1-for-12.
Right.
And I made a case, it's kind of hard. One of those games, he was 0-for-5. He pitched 14 innings and won 2-1 in the game in the World Series. Come on.
Yeah.
So I don't know if he should be penalized. Plus, as you know, that was in the dead ball era before 1920. So I said, well, if you take away those 11 at-bats, the 12 at-bats, I think you should. You also got a sacrifice fly in one, and before 19, I don't know, this happened to Ted Williams when he hit 406, by the way. If you got a sacrifice fly, it wasn't an RBI, and it wasn't an at-bat.
Right.
And he had one of those. So I got into it deeply a little, as you know I would do.
Sure.
And at the end I was like, yeah, technically Stanton's ahead, but you know, let's see what happens in the next series. And don't forget, Babe Ruth is Babe Ruth. I also saw one other thing, because I'm on a Babe Ruth kick. And this is in The Athletic, which I'm hoping would be better. But Kike Hernandez hit either his 15th or 16th postseason homer to tie or go ahead of Ruth. I'm not sure which numbers he's at.
Right.
And the headline was, I swear this is a headline, was Move Over, Babe. Kike Hernandez, great in the postseason, really good baseball player. Please, 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 don't mention him with Babe Ruth.
No, certainly not. And I want to get to some historical notes, as you were talking about there, before we circle back to the X's and O's of this thing, so to speak. But I should ask you before we do that, your thoughts on some of these rumors that potentially we could see Ohtani throwing for the first time all year. Maybe he comes in a critical situation here. One would get that sense. One would have to believe that he knows and the Dodgers know if he's up to it, if he's been doing any throwing, if there could be anything going on there. But it's to the Dodgers' advantage to keep that out there as a possibility. What do you think the odds could be that could happen? I mean, if you get to a situation, you know, like bullpens are all fried, it's the bottom of the ninth, game seven, you know, like it's, you know, potentially a high ceiling, low floor kind of a thing if you're bringing a guy in for the first time all year.
I know. Don't you think we would have heard, though, that he at least pitched a sim game, if not a minor league start a couple weeks ago or something?
Probably, yeah.
I don't know. I'd be reluctant. You know, you're messing with your $700 million investment.
Right.
Although I will say this, as you know, and I'm sure we're going to talk about the starters, where the Yankees have an edge, because after Flaherty and Yamamoto and Walker Buehler, their fourth starter is named, you know, bullpen game.
Right, yeah.
And by the way, as you probably saw in the Mets game, the final Mets game, they actually threw seven guys. They threw seven relievers. Now,
sure.
Normally you don't want to do those things, but I'll just give you a quick list as to why this might work for Ohtani for, I don't know, 30 pitches maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But they lost Tyler Glass now. They lost Clayton Kershaw, who, you know what I think of him. I think he's one of the greatest regular season pitchers ever, but he's not a big plus, and there's not been a big plus in the playoffs. But Gavin Stone, Dustin May, there's a couple other guys, but they lost so many starters that they're showing up with three, and they've already said, I mean, the manager already said they're going to have a bullpen game. I don't know if it's going to be game three or game four, but they're going to have a bullpen game, and that might work. I mean, the Mets, I think, scored five runs, but again, wasn't that final game like 12-5 or something?
I think the
ERA in the bullpen games is like, I don't know, 4-something or maybe even 5. But, you know, the Yankees have done their own, bringing in, you know, 3, 4, 5. This is the nature of baseball now.
Yep.
You know, hopefully we'll talk briefly at some point about Valenzuela. I mean, just terrible that he passed away at 63. But, you know, everybody talks about, oh, his first 8 starts, he was 8-0 with 5 shutouts in 8 complete games. You know?
Right.
And I remember the 81 World Series. Why? Because the Yankees were up 2-0, and this rookie sensation, you know, rookie of the year, Cy Young, and World Series winner, he was the guy who shut out the Yankees in Game 3 to make it 2-1, to make it a series. And I thought that at the time, I thought, you know, first, who is this guy? But then I thought at the time that was kind of the turning point. But those days are so far gone that even if you have 5 starters, and I don't know, Clark Smith, Lewis Heel, Nestor Cortez maybe, but, you know, they have Gerrit Cole at the top. They have Rodon, who's been really good lately, but all these guys can blow up. So now you're going to have, even with the Yankees, you know, they're going to have Weaver in every game. I think they've gone back to him as the closer, but, you know, they're going to have Clay Holmes, all these guys. Clay Holmes, again, 11 blown saves, he's not safe. Tommy Canley has been around for a long time. They got the Leiter Jr. was the biggest surprise to me. Tim Hill, you know, a hard thrower. So I think the bullpens are really important. Again, I think, and you can speak on this better than I thought Cleveland overused them, but had no choice. They had to.
Yeah.
And that was the downfall to me of Cleveland, because then these guys can start teeing off when the real good Cleveland guys, the real good Cleveland relievers, who, you know, I think their super closer had given up 5 earned runs all year and 2 home runs all year, and then, you know, Judge and Stanton go back-to-back, and you're like, well, he just doesn't have it. It's not because he's not really, really good. It's just he ran out, like a lot of them did, run out of gas. So I don't know what's going to happen when you get past. Look, Gerrit Cole, yes, the best pitcher in the World Series this year, absolutely. Reigning Cy Young winner, absolutely. Missed a lot of games this year, arguably fresh. But I saw in that Devers game, he owns, you know, the Boston Red Sox game. You probably saw. I never saw when the pitcher put up 4 fingers to walk him intentionally.
Yeah.
And then gave him like a nice wave towards first. He had a no-hitter through 4 innings till then, and then he gave up 7 runs in the next 2 innings.
Right.
I'm not saying one is related to another. What I'm saying is a guy like Cole, then Tommy Pham, who was 3-for-3 against him in the playoff game, and And Cole is just shaking his head and smiling when that happens. Like, what do I have to do to get this guy out? I don't know. Maybe buzz him on the first pitch and then throw sliders away. So I'm not sold on Cole this year. He is the wild card to me because he is better than everybody if he's hot, but he's also a guy who can melt down,
in my
opinion.
Right.
And so, you know, the Dodgers are used to bullpen games now, and there's going to be at least one, according to the manager. But, you know, they have so many. This Michael Kopech, remember when he came up? He was the guy who was throwing like 102 on a regular basis.
Right.
If he throws strikes, he's great. But they got Blake Treinen, you know, Evan Phillips, Ryan Brazier. I saw this Anthony Banda. I never saw him pitch before. He pitched, I think, an inning in the third against the Mets. He looked lights out.
Right.
I'm leaning Dodgers as well. It sounds like you are as well. You know, obviously, if the Yankees win, I'll be happy. But I just don't know. Yes, they have the edge in starting pitching for sure. Why? Because they can trot out five bodies who are starting pitchers.
Yeah.
The Dodgers can only trot out three.
Sure.
And, you know, it'll be all hands on deck in Game 7. You know how that goes if there is a Game 7. But that's my view. The pitching is really, really important. And I think the Dodgers lineup, I know we'll get into that briefly later, but the Dodgers lineup, 1-9 is a little better than the Yankees, I believe.
Sure, yeah. Well, I want to get into the X's and O's a little bit later and touch on some historical notes first. I will say, as far as what you said about the bullpens, two of the most important teams of the 2000s as far as the 21st century, as far as revolutionizing the game, it's a thing where it was started by small market teams and now everybody's doing it. In the early 2000s, of course, Billy Beane with Moneyball, Andrew Friedman, when he came to the Dodgers, that was the entire theory of the case, is that Andrew Friedman is going to bring Moneyball to a big budget. And so you're seeing that, and just about everybody has elements of this now. But the bullpen thing, Kansas City, 2014 and 2015, when they won two pennants in a World Series, they just had Johnny Cueto and a bunch of guys named Bob, essentially, you know. So that was the whole thing. You get a welfare ownership like the Dolans in Cleveland here. That's why they end up so reliant on the bullpen. Like, oh, we can do this on the cheap and not really have to pay any starters. So you saw that happening in the American League playoffs, and you saw what were the ultimately the limitations of that theory. I will say, you mentioned Fernando Valenzuela, and it is very sad that he passed away. And I will say that this is, it's also really weird when something like this happens, because the closest parallel that I can think of in sports, as somebody who went to one of the biggest regular season college football games of the 21st century, 2006, number one versus number two, Michigan and Ohio State, and the day before the big game, Bo Schembechler passes away. And it was very, there was part of it that was very awkward, because there's a very popular, I would say, novelty punk band down in Ohio State that does nothing but anti-Michigan tunes called the Dead Schembechlers. And they were going to be playing a big concert there.
Oh,
so I think that ended up getting, the plans ended up getting scrapped or something, but... it's really weird. And as you start to get into, well, you know, is it a thing that can, you know, not that you need anything for motivation right about now, but, you know, there's the whole win one for Fernando. Who knows? Who knows how that plays into it? But what I want to get into as far as the history of this, because we've talked about this, this has been talked about, of course, in the media a lot. 11 times previously, the Dodgers and Yankees have played in the World Series. But I was looking at this, and I have a historical framing that makes me feel old, and it's going to make you feel even older, Steve. And here's what I mean by that. You look at the times that they were in there. So the Dodgers made it to the World Series twice as the Brooklyn Robins, 1915 and then the aforementioned 1920, losing to Cleveland and Bill Wamsgotts with the unassisted triple play at League Park.
In League Park, right?
League Park's where it was, yeah. You know, so we've talked about that before, but it was the Dodgers, or it was not the Dodgers or the Robins or whatever in the 1920s after that. It was the Giants that played a couple of the Subway Series against the Yankees. It was not until 1941, because it's not until Leo Durocher got there, and really, and then McPhail in the front office, the combination of them really turning them around. Here are the years that they played in the World Series, Dodgers and Yankees, 1941, 1947, 1949, 1952, 1953, 1955, 1956, 1963, 1977, 1978, and 1981. So you had them playing 11 times over the course of 41 years. And essentially, although you can tell from the grouping of it here that it was in clumps and that you had a 14-year gap at one point, 63 to 77, but on average, once every 4 years. So instead of once every 4 years going to the polls to vote for Tweedledum or Tweedledee, on average, you would have the Dodgers and the Yankees playing. But here's the thing that's going to make us feel really old. And as somebody who in my childhood remembers the tail end of the Dodgers-Yankees rivalry, okay, this is the middle third of baseball history, essentially. That's when that was. If you think about it, you know, 41 to 81, that's pretty much, you know, if you divide up baseball into thirds, that was the rivalry that dominated the middle third of that. Does that make you feel a little older? Because it makes me feel older thinking about that.
It does, and I remember, although my father told me I wasn't around for it, but, you know, the Dodgers and Giants, like, he used to tell me, he goes, I don't know what the big deal was about Bobby Thompson's home run off of Ralph Branco. They were just playing to lose to the Yankees because the Yankees had won in 49 and 50, and they would go on to win in 52 and 53. Mm-hmm. But as you also know, the first one ever was 55 when Johnny Padres shut out the Yankees in Yankee Stadium in Game 7. And I only, again, heard from my father about it because that's the one in Game 1 where Jackie Robinson stole home and he was probably out. I saw a super slow-motion picture of it once. He looked like he was out by an inch, but he was safe. And Barrett jumps up and gets in the umpire's face and stuff. And then I later saw an interview with Mantle and Whitey Ford, and they said, we don't understand why he did it. They were down 2 runs. Which I never knew. So he cut the lead to 1, but a lot of the Dodgers say, well, he really sparked us with that, and that's how we won the World Series, coupled with Johnny Padres, you know, with a shutout in Game 7. But they could not beat the Yankees. They had never beaten the Yankees, and that was the first one. And then, you know, I vaguely remember 63 with Koufax, because Koufax, I still think, is the greatest pitcher ever. I know he was only great for those 5 or 6 years, but when you look at what he did, unanimous Cy Youngs, when they only gave out Cy Young to one pitcher, you know, eventually it was one in both leagues. And it's always been there. And of course, Reggie Jackson, not my favorite Yankee, but 3 home runs on 3 pitches, you know, Game 6, 77. I mean, it's just incredible. And as we said, Fernando Valenzuela, to me, gets credit for their 81 victory, because he shut the door. You kind of thought it might be over. 2-0 Yankees. The Yankees are the Yankees. They had beaten the Dodgers 2 times in the prior 5 years, or 4 years even. And he's the one who shut them out, won the game, and set the tone for the World Series victory for the Dodgers.
Yeah, that's a very good point. And in terms of that era of baseball, I want to bring up another point here. And this is going to be one of these ones that only from my crazed mind are you going to hear something like what I'm about to say. But I had something that kind of occurred to me, and that is that this series, and this series exemplifies what I'm about to talk about in some ways, but we've seen something in baseball since about 2016 or so. You sort of go through these eras of some of the teams here. 2017, certainly, if you look at the fact that that was the first time the Dodgers made it during this run. But during this 2016, 2017 to present, I've noticed something that's kind of similar to what we saw in the 1970s and the 1980s in baseball. And it's something where, again, baseball was so much bigger back then. But maybe the fact that I'm noticing this happening again, maybe this is a sign of some kind of health for baseball. And what that is in terms of the star talent in the game, we went through a period in baseball here where, you know, the Yankees made it a bunch of times in the World Series around the turn of the century. So you'd see guys like Jeter making it there, Buster Posey doing the same thing, Madison Bumgarner in the 2010s. But you're seeing a thing like you saw in the 70s and 80s, where big-time stars have now made it to the World Series with 2 different teams, helped 2 different teams to make it there. I'm going to give you a little bit of a roll call for the 70s, and unsurprisingly, there's a lot of Oakland A's guys on the list here. Reggie Jackson, Catfish Hunter, Pete Rose, Raleigh Fingers, Tug McGraw, Cecil Cooper, Tom Seaver, Joe Morgan, Tony Perez, Willie Hernandez. You look at this era, and you've got a lot of guys, not all of them are in this series, but some of them are. Mookie Betts, Corey Seager, Freddie Freeman, Tyler Glasnow, Juan Soto, Garrett Cole, Justin Verlander, Max Scherzer, Jacob deGrom, Trey Turner. Actually, Max Scherzer made it with 3 teams. But you look at this, and it's one of those things where maybe it is a sign of health in the game because, again, the stars, we went through a long period of time here where it felt like they were sort of just siloed away and not really known to the mainstream. And you've got guys like, you know, Otani has been probably one of the biggest name recognition stars since, I would say, Jeter, Ken Griffey Jr., Barry Bonds, etc. You know, Aaron Judge now kind of, you know, joining this tier as well. Aaron Judge is not on this list, but it's a thing where that's got to be a sign of health in the game, is if the bigger stars are getting to be known more, and they're known more to the mainstream when they keep making it back in October.
And not only that, they're getting paid stupid money, in my opinion, but that's just my opinion.
Sure. Yeah. But it just that just kind of caught my eye, that it was kind of a similarity to the way it was back then. Of where you would see that. You'd see somebody who was capable of helping to lift the team to the World Series and then go do it again somewhere else. And it seemed to me that we had been through a good period of time in baseball without seeing too many guys that were doing that. But we're seeing a lot of them in this era. And that just is, it's an interesting sort of sidelight to this series because everybody's going to talk about the amount of star power that's involved. And that, to me, is one of the things I look at, is that there's a number of guys who have World Series experience because they've done it with other teams. Unsurprising that teams with the payrolls like the Dodgers and the Yankees are going to sign away guys who've been successful on other teams, right? But that's how it looks to me anyways, as far as a similarity from that era to this era. But going back to the X's and O's where we were talking about here, something that you had mentioned before about the top-heavy nature of both lineups, I find the Dodgers lineup to be far less top-heavy. But yeah, it's basically the three and the three, you know, in each lineup here, the core of the lineup that stands out here. And in looking at it, I mean, you could make an argument, and I don't know how far back you'd have to go to even make a strong argument that this is the case, but that you have the three best hitters in baseball that are in this World Series in whatever order, Otani, Judge, and Soto. You could make a very good case for them as 1, 2, 3 in any order, excluding anybody else in baseball.
I think that's 100% correct. I'll also mention, though, for the Yankees, Gleyber Torres has really become, you know, I don't know if you heard it out there, but he got killed for not running out of ball. I think he got benched for a game. He said it was his mistake. But since then, the last 6 weeks in the playoffs, he was, he's been a really good leadoff man, which is kind of a setup. And when you walk him or he gets a single, which he's done a lot in the playoffs and at the end of the regular season, and you got Soto and Judge coming up after, you're in trouble in the first inning. And that'll be a big one. Freeman says he's 100%, and if he's 100%, he's right up in that group. Otani, Betts, Freeman, Soto, Judge, Stanton. Stanton plays like Soto and Judge in the playoffs and in the playoffs only. You might give them a little edge, but then you see a guy, as we discussed, Tommy Edman. Who's Tommy Edman? Now he's batting cleanup, and he just won the NLCS MVP. But even more interesting, further down the lineup, you see a guy like a Max Muncy, who's been around, who's been in the playoffs, who's been in the World Series. They got a lot more guys than the Yankees. You know, I think the Yankees have Rizzo and Soto. Obviously, neither one winning as a Yankee, but at least they've won World Series. But the Dodgers got a bunch of guys who are on the Dodgers, and Max Muncy in this NLCS that just finished, and I read this on, I think it was on an ESPN article. He got on base 11 times in a row. He had 8 walks, 2 homers, and a single in a row. So what I'm saying is they have guys deeper down the lineup. Edmund was batting, you know, I thought he was batting 7th or 8th before this. Now he's batting cleanup. And Otani, Betts, Freeman, and the MVP of the NLCS with Muncy not far behind. That's just, to me, deeper. You know, I love Rizzo. I don't know what happened to him field-wise. I always go back to that concussion last year. When he got a concussion, he played like 6 more weeks after the concussion. Then he was diagnosed with a concussion. He really hasn't been Rizzo, and then he got hurt this year a couple times. He really hasn't been Rizzo, and he couldn't catch. You saw the 3-foot. Ron Darling was trying to protect Rizzo and said the pitcher flipped him a changeup. He was 3 feet away. If he flipped him a fastball, he would have had no chance to catch it. There was just something wrong with Rizzo on the field. He got some hits. I'm not sure he's 100%. But he and Soto are the World Series guys, where the Dodgers, I didn't count how many there are, but there's probably 8 or 10 of them, you know, because they been to the World Series, and they've won one World Series. So I give the Dodgers, I give the Yankees starting pitching, yes. They got the edge. Bullpen, the Dodgers have so many of these guys who just got through a seven-inning game to clinch the NLCS. Seven pitchers for nine innings. I mean, I think that's helpful in what they're going to have to do in the World Series. And the one thing I'll say, I mean, I never was a big bullpen, what's up, throw the bullpen guys, but it kind of works. And the other problem is, you know, everybody talks about what? Don't go the third time through the lineup. Oh, you can't have anybody pitch the third time through the lineup. You just can't do it. Well, when you have one of these games, nobody's seen anybody a second time. So you have to give a little advantage to the pitcher. Of course, if you're throwing seven of them, two of them could be wild, or three of them might not have their best stuff, and there could be a license to have a killing by the other team. But if you can have seven guys, and by the way, the Dodgers have seven guys, they might have more guys. So it was pretty interesting to watch the last game. I didn't like it, the last Met game, because it was just, I mean, the Dodgers were up in front the whole time. They had a tougher time with San Diego in retrospect.
Yeah.
And I think you're right. The Padres easily could have won in five, and you picked them.
Yeah.
And they were the hot selection, and I thought they had a big chance to win game five. But, you know, the Dodgers, they did the bullpen thing. I think they'll have to use it for one game. I don't think they'll have to use it for two. Depends on when the off days are. You know how that goes.
Cause yep.
They haven't done in the old days, as you know, with Saturday, Sunday travel, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday travel, Saturday, Sunday. And now they're avoiding Sundays like the plague, because whatever I think of baseball, and I love baseball more than anything, football is the 800-pound gorilla in the room. And they intentionally missed on Sundays, I believe. Friday, Saturday, travel day, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, travel, Friday, Saturday. The World Series will not be played on a Sunday this year. I'd like to know that stat, although maybe they've done it in the past, Rick, and I've never really noticed it. But I noticed it this year.
Oh, yeah. They generally stay away from Sundays now because of the strength of Sunday Night Football. That being said, it really is a matter of pick your poison for baseball, because undoubtedly they're going to do better Saturday night. But Saturday night, again, you've
still
got
college.
I mean, between NBC, ABC, ESPN,
yes.
ESPN2,
right.
You've got a whole bunch of college games that are going to be biting into
you're
you.
Right.
So
you're
it is a matter of picking your poison here. But I got a couple questions I want to pose to you, and these are things that I think are going to be questions that may have a lot to do with tipping the balance in the series here. So we've talked about this, again, as far as Stanton goes. You talked about his strength in the postseason, but that wasn't necessarily anything we foresaw coming in. So in terms of something unforeseen, the way that he broke out in the postseason, especially what he did in the Cleveland series here, versus the Dodgers at one point, what was it, 30 innings in a row, I think, scoreless baseball from that.
Yeah, 33 tied the all-time record.
From that pitching staff. So if we're going to be looking at things that we would have thought were very unlikely coming in, or at least somewhat unlikely coming into the playoffs, which one do you think is more likely to go forward? I would say, based on the amount of the layoff here, from the end of the last series to this series here, I think that always benefits the pitching. It gives them a chance to get fresher again at this time of the year when they really need it. Sometimes it chills the hitters off at a very inopportune time. I would think that the Dodgers' pitching would be more likely to replicate what they'd done in that stretch than Stanton keeping it up at his pace. What do you think?
I'm just not sure, because Stanton has a long track record now, and he hasn't played in the World Series. As most of the Yankees, I don't mean Rizzo, and I don't mean Soto, but most of the Yankees have not played in the World Series. It's a little different deal. I'm not sure, because Stanton has shown in the playoffs, I don't know how he does it. You watch him during the regular season, he misses on a regular basis, he'll miss pitches by a foot. And I am not exaggerating. Literally, balls in the left-handed batter's box, or sliders, or breaking balls down that, you know, bounce in the dirt. 3 feet. He looks so horrific, but something happens to him. And I know some guys can turn it on, but I think he might be one of those guys where he can actually do it. So I would say I think Stanton is going to perform well. The wild card to me is, will Judge perform better, because he's been terrible. But he did hit two home runs late in that series, and if he can get going, then I think Soto, Judge, Stanton without question. Now, big criticisms of Boone for putting in Wells, the left-handed hitting catcher, just because he wanted to go lefty-righty, lefty-righty. This guy could not hit a high fastball.
Right.
Everybody knew it on the Guardians. He did hit a home run in the last game. Why? Because if you're going to try and throw high fastballs and you make a mistake down, it's right down the middle. So he did run into one, but I almost think Soto, Judge, Stanton is so scary. Again, Gleyber Torres walks or singles up the middle, and those three guys are coming up. It's going to be hard not to score a run, in my opinion. As for the pitching, you're right about the pitching, but Flaherty was a great find. Yamamoto hasn't thrown, I saw this stat, hasn't thrown more than 79 pitches in the game in the playoffs. Walker Buehler was coming back from injury as well. Do I think they'll be better? Yes. They're not only well-rested, but they've healed from their injuries. But I wouldn't walk away from Stanton. I think he's going to have a good series. And that's why I think between the finding and the discovery of the bullpen for the Yankees, and that discovery, again, is more like Weaver and Leiter than Clay Holmes, that could really help them down the stretch. And the Dodgers, you know, it's like, what do they call it? It's relievers by committee. You know, we got seven guys literally who can do it, maybe more than seven guys. So I think that's going to help them. I'm a little afraid of a bullpen game for the Yankees for the same reason, against the Yankees for the same reason I said. You're not going to see a pitcher twice. Because if he gets knocked around a little, he's coming out after three batters. Or if he gets two outs and lets two batters on, he might be gone. Because they got seven guys who can do it. They might have more than seven guys who can do it.
Right.
I think it's an interesting dynamic. I'll leave it up to the analytics guys to do like relief pitchers in bullpen games because I don't know what it is. But I'm just saying, as a practical matter, you're going to see that guy once. And the next time you're up, you're going to see another guy. And the next time up, you're going to see another guy. And that's how it's going to be when the Dodgers do that. It's unusual if a guy goes two complete innings. I saw a couple of those guys go four outs. Because seven pitchers, you got to get those six extra outs.
Yeah.
But I don't like them, but that's baseball today. And I just, you know, the inability of pitchers to last. The only starter who made five innings for the Dodgers, Flaherty went five innings.
Right.
But again, he's got six, seven guys. It was like what I thought might happen with Cleveland against the Yankees, which was their advantage too. But I'll say it again. I think every one of those guys, maybe there was one guy who was lights out, but every one of those guys gave up big home runs. And they just, I think, ran out of gas.
Well, and when I talk about, as I did before, some of the most influential teams of the 21st century, certainly Tampa Bay, when Joe Maddon was there, you talked about that a long time ago. He was the first one to really start doing the shift. I think it was Tampa Bay under Kevin Cash that the bullpen games really kind of took off. And I remember when they did that to the Dodgers in 2020, remember that was kind of a novelty at the time when you would see
that.
So now it's spread to where, you know, even the Dodgers are doing it. But the next question that I want to give you is this one here, because what occurs to me when we're looking at this here, the variance in terms of possibility that there is with the Dodgers, because again, against all odds, they went out and put up that 33-inning streak earlier in the playoffs. And again, if you look at the pedigree of the pitchers involved on this staff, not a big surprise, but it just so happens this year in terms of those guys being healthy or effective, Walker Buehler has really been neither at key points in time. And he to me is sort of the poster child for the staff. But I look at it, and you've said that the Yankees have better starting pitching, and I wouldn't necessarily disagree with you, but I'm going to agree conditionally, because here's my statement. My statement is the Yankees have a higher floor, the Dodgers have a higher ceiling. Would you agree with that?
Say that one more time, I'm sorry.
I think the Yankees win in terms of floor. Their floor is higher. The Dodgers' floor is lower. I think the Dodgers' ceiling is higher based on what they've shown. Do you agree?
I think that's probably true, because one guy I forgot who had a terrible series against the Mets now, but this Teoscar Hernandez.
Yeah.
You know, I think he only got two hits against the Mets, but of course in the final game when it really counted. But I think he's a big-time player as well, so I gave you the top three, and he bats fourth, and then again, or maybe Edmund bats fourth and he bats fifth, because Edmund's the MVP and he's only got two hits in the last five games. And then he got Max Muncy after that. So I think because of that, I'll say this, I believe their run scored, despite the terrific trio on the Yankees, I think their runs scored. Again, they just averaged 9 game against the Mets. They ate up Manaea, who had pitched great against them previously, and, you know, knocked him out of the game, I think, in 3 innings or something. So I think they have a higher, if they average 7, 8, 9 runs a game, I think they're obviously going to win this series. Do I think they can? I think Gerrit Cole once in a while has reigning Cy Young Award winner, top pitcher, but every once in a while he can lay an egg. And if he lays one in game one of the World Series, that's a big problem. And they're playing, as you know, in Los Angeles.
Yes. And by the way, in terms of where you would do a bullpen game, you know, once upon a time, I mean, I'm old enough to remember when we went by different rules in American League parks and National League parks because there wasn't the universal DH. So that would kind of determine, you know, who you would, we want to have our pitcher batting in this game. Maybe we want to do a bullpen game in this game because we're going to switch the pitchers out a lot anyways. That's all out the window now with the universal DH. And by the way, if there wasn't the universal DH, clearly the Dodgers wouldn't even be here at this point in time because Ohtani really wouldn't be able to play the field anywhere with his arm injury. So, yeah, that rules change essentially is one prime reason that the Dodgers are able to be here because if you take Ohtani out of this offense, what are they, an 85-win team at best, basically? So, yeah, that's really made the difference for them. Before we get to picks for the series, are there any other aspects of this matchup that you want to get to that we haven't talked about yet?
Not really, because I got Hernandez in there. I forgot to even mention him, which was, you know, a mistake. But I think the Dodgers have a deeper lineup. I think the Yankees have better starting pitching. I think the bullpens are almost equal now if the new Yankee saviors in the bullpen, Weaver and Leiter, if they can still pitch the way they've pitched, they have a real good bullpen. Again, to me, the Tynan guy is an excellent reliever. They have 3 or 4 really good relievers, but they have 7 relievers who can go in and pitch an inning, as they did the other day. So I think it's an evenly matched series, but I do give the Dodgers the edge, and I am saying mainly because of their deeper lineup, and I think they will score more runs than the Yankees. And as we know, Rick, that's the name of the game.
Well, it is, and particularly this year with all of the shootouts that we've seen in postseason baseball. You hear a lot of this, the pitching has the advantage over the hitting in October. Well, somebody forgot to send out the memo this year because clearly hasn't been the case this year, and that's where I agree with you. I will say, again, you've mentioned Rizzo a couple of times. He is not somebody that I mentioned before as one of the big stars to make it to the World Series with 2 different teams because he's not now what he was with the Cubs. Now he's pretty much washed. As we basically covered, but with the Cubs, he was a star. And I will say, whenever he had any kind of moments during the American League Championship Series, all the Cleveland fans were like, "Oh, I hate that guy." So people remember things forever in this town, but he's obviously not that guy anymore. But again, just the depth of the lineups here, I agree with you. That's kind of why I give the edge the same way. To the Dodgers. I'm going to say Dodgers in 6. I could make a case for it going 7, but I'm going to try and learn the lesson that I need to learn from previously in the playoffs because my picks have just been garbage to this point. You look at it ahead of the time in the series. Oh, the series is going 7. But you have to try and kind of game it out as far as, like, what happens if the series starts this way or that way or whatever. Like you said, if Gerrit Cole does not have a good outing early on, the Yankees are in big trouble. So there are any number of factors that could influence the series towards the Yankees or make it an even shorter series win for the Dodgers if it goes a certain way. So you have to try to kind of game this out, much like the presidential race here, which is down to a less than 1 percentage point in the 7 swing states here. You know, there's any number of factors as we're looking at the World Series here that could swing it one way or another. But, you know, depth of the hitting in the lineup here, that's the reason I'm going to go with the Dodgers. I have underestimated them to this point here. I could say the same for the Yankees, except I picked the Yankees over Cleveland when I was making my picks on Twitter, but that wasn't a real hard one for me, looking at how outmatched Cleveland was, especially on paper. That's not giving the Yankees a ton of credit for saying you're going to get past a team with a payroll that is, you know, made up of 13 cents and a piece of bubble gum lint. So, you know, if that's the only difference there, that I didn't underestimate the Yankees as much, that's not much of a difference. But I'm going to say Dodgers in six, Steve.
Yeah, well, I picked the Dodgers over the Guardians, as you know, in our preview, and I'm going to stay with Dodgers, and I'm going to go with you on Dodgers in six. When the manager says bullpen game either three or four, I think if Flaherty, Yamamoto, and Buehler are healthy and can start, I think you got to pitch Buehler in game three because you want him around for game seven. If you wait that extra day, I can't do the days really in my head, but if you wait that extra day, so he would pitch, let me see, Friday, Saturday, game three would be Monday, and Tuesday, Wednesday, off day Thursday. I think he might have to pitch on short rest. But if they go bullpen game in game three, now this may be, the, you know, are they up 2-0? Are they down 2-0? Is it 1-1? But if you want Buehler at least able to contribute something in game seven, he's got to pitch game three.
Right.
And then you go bullpen game four. And then I think you'll have Flaherty and Yamamoto back. So that's going to, I don't know if he said that just to try and confuse people, but I think, again, if you're thinking it's going to be a six or seven game series, which most people think to seem, think that it's going to be, then you got to have a guy like a Buehler pitch game three to get that extra day as opposed to pitching game four.
I would agree. And I think that, again, as you say, some of this will be circumstantial based on the way that the series starts out. But, yes, they're going to have to keep an eye on if this thing goes seven, how do we want it playing out as far as the availability of the pitchers. So that part of it is going to be key. But it's going to be a classic series to watch, no pun intended. It's going to be a great one. I will just say, again, as somebody who is such a hater as far as, you know, the way that sometimes it seems like MLB sticks its thumb on the scale here, we had record low ratings last year with Texas and Arizona. I know it won't be the same, but I'm hoping it just ekes by on this one here, because I'm hoping that the agenda of Fox Sports and everybody else for let's get the glamour teams in at all costs, I'd like to see that fall flat on its face, even though I don't think it's going to. I think it's going to be further incentivized by the ratings that they're going to pull in here, but we shall see. It'll be a great series, very entertaining. For most of us in the Heartland, little to no rooting action here in the series, but it will be fun to watch, and it's always very, very much fun and informative and entertaining to break it down with you, Steve Callis. Thank you so much for being here today, my friend.
My pleasure. Just one thing, I actually wrote down the days of rest now, and if Buehler pitches the third game on Monday as opposed to the fourth game on Tuesday, he'll have full rest for the game seven on Saturday, and I'd be shocked if they don't do it that way. But yeah, always a pleasure doing this with you, Rick, and I hope we get Ken back sometime, maybe at the end of the World Series, if not certainly for spring training next year. I'll be really looking forward to that.
Absolutely. I'm looking forward to the next time it's the three of us, but anytime it's even the two of us here, Steve, it is always great. Thank you so much, buddy, and thank you, everybody, for tuning in to FDH Lounge, mini episode 1773.